Welcome to Branching Out, a podcast presented by the reporters and editors of the Acorn newspapers, offering you a closer look at the news in your community.
Hi, this is Branching Out with the Acorn. The date's March 15th, and I am not Ian Bradley or Kyle Jory. This is Becca, all COVID, all the time Whitnall. I'm a Thousand Oaks reporter. Today, we're going to be talking about COVID vaccines with Catherine Krikorian, a Santa Susana High School student who's done research on people's willingness to take the vaccines. We'll also be talking to Joan Araujo, Central Services Director for the County of Ventura. Joan's overseeing the distribution of the vaccine for the county.
So, hello, I'm Joan Araujo, and my usual job with the County of Ventura is Director of Central Services for the Ventura County Public Works Agency. So, for the Public Works Department, I oversee fiscal, human resources, IT services, health and safety, strategic management, and also the county's real estate division. But my current job is as a disaster service worker. I'm overseeing, and actually about 2 months ago this week, we opened the Fairgrounds Vaccination Center. So we are fast at work now.
Now, are you overseeing just this site?
We're overseeing this site, which this was the first large site the county opened. And our first day, I think we just gave a few hundred vaccines. Our top days have been about 1,800. And the volume we have is just predicated on what we get from the state.
Yeah. Now, with your background in public works, I know that the county, I just at the board of directors meeting this week, was talking about, was talking about how many people are not doing their regular jobs and have been kind of reassigned for right now.
Yeah.
How was it that this is what your assignment came to be?
Well, I've been with the county for 12 years, and in full disclosure, I've worked for Public Works for 2 years, but prior to that, I had a 30-year career in healthcare, and for the county, I had done many special projects and some large-scale things, and so my name came up somewhere, I don't know where, but I was called up as a disaster service worker, as any public employee could be, but I'm not unique by any means. Our agency, I believe, has had about 60 people serve as disaster service workers. There are always two of us from Public Works on site. This week, Peter Shady, who's a deputy director in Watershed Protection District, is overseeing the site with me. And then all of our sites are filled with disaster service workers and being run by people in leadership from all kinds of agencies, from Harbor, from the CEO's office, from Human Service Agency, and then the 40 disaster service workers I have here with us are from all over the county. Human Service Agency, Library, Animal Control, Public Defender's Office. It's really been fascinating to get to know so many people from the big county family.
That would be a cool opportunity.
It really has been. It's been fun.
Are the nurses, are the folks doing the injections, are they local, or are those some of the program? I can't remember the name of them.
Sure. We have 36 nurses here from a nurse staffing company called Snap Nurse.
Snap Nurse, that's it.
And they all stay in a hotel in Oxnard together and come in early in the morning on a bus. And they are from all over the country. I feel like a little more from the Florida southern end of the country, and then some, maybe they escaped the cold winters up in Michigan and that kind of area, And they're all here on 90-day contracts.
I have to congratulate you guys.
Thank you.
Everybody I've talked to is, whether it's getting their vaccinations here, because I cover Thousand Oaks, I talked to a lot of people who've got to the Goebel Center. Mm-hmm. Everyone has said how smoothly it's gone for them, how friendly everyone is, mm-hmm. how organized it is. But the first couple of days we were talking about, not that it didn't go smoothly inside, but
sure.
Can you talk about revving up to that? Because there wasn't much of a rev up.
We just had a vision of what we should put together. And one of my colleagues and I, Dave Fleisch, opened this up. Dave's the director of roads and transportation. The good thing is he was a very high-ranking officer in the Navy, and he handled a lot of logistics in wartime. And so together we sort of made a plan, kind of a back-on-the-napkin plan, and we progressively made adjustments. As our volume grew and as different populations came in, we quickly learned with senior citizens one patient getting a vaccine could mean two helpers, maybe a driver and someone to help them ambulate or help them with their wheelchair. So we had to spread out in a bigger space for social distancing. We learned we could move a couple of communication elements from registration, where we were doing it one-on-one, to a group setting. When you have a pod of people waiting their 15 minutes, you could give them their discharge instructions then. So we learned these little tips and tricks. And also, depending if your first dose or second dose, the registration time frame is dramatically different. And so how many registrations clerks do you put in each area? So those are all refinements and through lessons learned. And I think we've come a long way. And we have a daily little brief meeting with all the site managers, and we share all these tips and tricks to how to improve the flow.
I was going to ask about that because mm-hmm. you opened first. You probably had a lot of insight
yeah.
to share with each of the centers as they opened up throughout the county.
Right. And each of the managers until the most recent clinic, they came and joined us for a week first. And we found through doing that, we had them first spend almost a day walking the path of the patient. So they started in the parking lot, and with no knowledge of where do I go, what do I do? And they stayed with the parking lot attendants for an hour. And then they stayed with the door monitors for an hour. And then they stayed with registration for an hour. And we had them do that all the way through the path of that patient so they could experience what went well, what the challenge points were, what questions were asked, what do you need to communicate at those places. And then in the subsequent days, we showed them more the management of this site. And because we still have to do payroll here, we still have to take attendance. We have to schedule breaks and lunches and all those kinds of things. But just learning the experience from the patient's point of view, we thought really was one of the most important things.
I know so many people now have gotten the vaccines, mm-hmm. but we still have a lot of people who haven't. Mm-hmm. Can they expect after they play kind of computer roulette and they arrive here, what happens?
So the most important thing is only sign up for an appointment if your category is approved, because it is a portal that we can't control, and it will let people sign up for an appointment if they don't qualify. And so we really ask that you pay attention to what the current criteria is. And then when you get here, bring a photo ID, hopefully with your full name and date of birth, and then bring your documentation that shows you fit in that criteria. If it's strictly you're here because your age qualifies, your ID is adequate. If you're here because you're a school teacher or a different category, a healthcare worker, what we need is your current employment. So a pay stub, a W-2, something like that that shows, yeah, that you're currently working in that job. And so then it's, we've joked, it's like, then you get the golden ticket and you get to come in.
Are people getting that message? I know early on, because the system allowed you to do it, people were showing up. Is that message kind of getting out there to fewer people?
It's gotten out the majority. We go through little waves of misinformation. And sometimes we can track it back maybe to social media that, oh, they're letting in this group, and we're not. And we do go by, and we have to go by our public health orders of who's authorized. And so nothing makes us happier than vaccinating people.
On Monday, the 15th, which is when this is airing, the county's opening up to people with certain health conditions.
Yes.
And even then, they need to bring documentation, and it's not till the 15th.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's such an important group to bring in. And what we need is a note from the doctor. It could be on the doctor's letterhead, it could be on their prescription pad, or it could be on this form doctors have from public health. And it just needs the patient's name, date of birth, the doctor's signature, and a statement from the doctor that they do have a pre-existing condition that allows them to get their vaccine. We don't want to know what the condition is. We don't have to find that out. We don't need to know medications or anything personal. We just need that signature from the doctor that says they have a condition.
All right, so they come, they show their documentation, they've got the golden ticket, then what?
They have an appointment, and then they'll come in, and if a vaccination table is open, they would go after registration directly to the table. If not, we have sort of a queuing up system. We tried to, from our memories, study what Disneyland did and to develop that. And the nurse will question the patient, verify. An important element, they can't have had a different vaccine in the last 14 days. And we've had people that have had a tetanus shot or maybe a shingles vaccine, and it isn't appropriate to give any second vaccine within 14 days. So we have to get those appointments rescheduled. And also someone couldn't currently be infected with COVID. And so we get the vaccine administered, and you then are seated in a waiting area. If you've never had any sort of response or reaction to anything, your waiting time is 15 minutes. If you have a past history of reactions, your waiting time will be 30 minutes. And then you get discharged after a medical professional verifies you're still feeling well, sometimes a lot better than when you came in because you're so excited. And then you get to go home. So I would say in a perfect cycle, it's about a 25-minute cycle.
That seems to be what I've heard from people, really. Mm-hmm. I think my parents, who were in that first group at 75 and plus, sorry, Mom, don't give away her age. The first time they came, it was about an hour long. They got over here a little early because they didn't know if they'd be able to find it. But once you're here, you see how obvious it is. But they didn't know. But they said they were out 50 minutes. They were out. And are people, are you seeing many reactions?
We've had a very few. I would say the majority of concerns are more anxiety related, and why we believe those are anxiety related, they'll start before the vaccine administration. And some people will openly just say, I'm really, really anxious about this. And so, but very, very few, and I haven't done the math, but if we gave 1,500 vaccines, we don't see a reaction every day. So out of 1,500
wow.
a day. So I feel very secure about getting it. My husband's gotten the vaccine. I have, as soon as each of my children are eligible, I will strongly encourage them to get the vaccine.
So we were talking about who's eligible and who's not. And if you're not eligible, you're not going to get the shot.
Correct.
And I was really impressed just a few weeks in, and maybe not even that long, into the county administering vaccines. I know Barry Zimmerman, who is I forgot his title, but he's overseeing the testing and the vaccines. He was saying that we don't have any to spare. I know people were coming at the end of the day trying to get the extras, but because they're good for 5 days,
right,
you just use the ones the next morning.
Correct.
Is that still the case?
It is. And we're giving Pfizer here at the fairgrounds. There's 6 doses in a vial. And so, of course, our patients aren't always divisible by 6. And so, but we watch in the last hour, we only open vial by vial. So we would never have more than a partially used vial. And what we do is we keep a list of people that we know are qualified, and that is who we call to use those final doses that are already drawn into a syringe. So it's typically just a couple of people. And in Ventura, we have local nursing homes that steadily have different staff, or they get new patients in. And we've had a couple of dental practices that have given us names of employees. All of our staff here at the vaccine center used up. We didn't get appointments during the day. We each waited to use a dose at the end of the day for our first dose and our second dose. And actually here we had the benefit of the testing center next door. So that staff needed to be vaccinated also. And all of the staff was very gracious in sort of waiting their turns for the end of the day. And we, for life circumstances, we have had a turnover in some of our disaster service workers, and the testing site has gotten new employees. So that's a steady stream of people that we use to vaccinate at the end of the day. We don't vaccinate them during the day.
Got it. I would think that they would, like I was saying again before we started recording, that they would qualify, that you all would qualify as medical workers.
Right.
In that first group, because that's what you're doing.
Right. And Dr. Levin, our public health officer, specified in the order that everyone working at these centers does qualify for a vaccine.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. And gosh, I can't remember. It was thousands of people that were infected going through the testing center daily that the staff was exposed to. And on our high days, we're seeing, 1,800 people here that need the vaccine. So there's a tremendous amount of exposure for each of our staff members. And so I'm really thankful we could all be vaccinated.
Gosh, what else should folks know about?
We are positively not holding back vaccine. We schedule as many appointments as we have doses. We're always anxious to learn how many we're going to get next week. All of our sites are set up for the long run, and just the energy and commitment of all of our disaster service workers that are making this possible has really been amazing. And no one is asking, when do I get to go back to my usual job? People are excited to be here. And I mean, you can come to work and know you're making a difference every single day. And so even if the wind is whistling here right next to the ocean, or we're flooding like we did yesterday and today, and whatever the case may be, everyone just goes with the flow. And so it's making vaccinations possible. And I think our county is just about to 250,000 vaccines administered. So we're clipping along, and we're poised to clip along at a faster pace as soon as that vaccine comes in.
Yeah, Johnson, I guess we're getting, or maybe we have, getting the Johnson & Johnson this week.
We got a small allotment, and that's all going to be at one site. And we narrow those kind of things because you don't want mix-up. You want a very clean demarcation. And so those will be administered quickly.
Have they said expect to be here at least through July or anything like that?
No, what I've heard is we have this site leased until the 1st of July. And then if there is not a fair, then the site may continue after that. And then if there is a fair, then we'd have to go to a different location. But I don't know where that would be. And I don't know when they're going to decide on the fair. I would think very soon.
Wait, I think that answers all my questions. Okay. I sure appreciate you taking time out, especially when you have so many people in there to get through the process. So thank you for your time.
It's been a delight, Becca. It has.
Yeah,
you too.
Hey guys, we talked with Catherine via Zoom, and being the technical wizards that we are, you may hear a little echo on our end. So just wanted to give you a heads up. We think you can hear loud and clear, but that's what's going on here. All right. Welcome, Catherine. Thank you for being on the show. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell them a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Catherine Krikorian. I'm a sophomore at Santa Susana High School in Simi Valley.
And you're 16?
Yeah, I'm 16.
Wow. So you did a project looking at people's willingness to get the vaccine. How did you decide to do that?
Well, COVID-19, I think we all know how much devastation it's caused, not just the deaths and the sickness that it's causing people, but also the mental health impact. And it's a really important thing that we can help find out why people might have an aversion to getting vaccinated, why some people might view the vaccine in a negative way. And I thought it was really important to look further into that issue to see how we can encourage more people to get vaccinated or to be able to make informed choices about their health.
Got it. And, you know, I skipped right over why you did this, why you did a study in the first place. It had to do with obviously it was the science fair. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it's unusual to have to do it all online.
Yeah, it was definitely an unusual experience. I also participated in the science fair last year, and it was so different this year and last year. Having to do it all, the whole presentation was on Zoom. The award ceremony was on Zoom. Everything was virtual. And but I don't think it took away from the experience for me, because I really was able to learn a lot, even though everything was online. I was able to communicate really well with the girl who was coordinating the science fair. And I was able to, you know, since everything was online, I really spent a lot of time doing research on the internet and seeing what I could find and what I could do for my project. And I think I really became a lot more informed about some of the research like sources and information sources online.
What we should probably mention is that you won first place for that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What were your big takeaways and maybe surprises from the study with the results?
Yeah, so for my project, the way I was able to look at people's vaccine opinions was that I distributed a survey asking about what they believed about the vaccine. And overall, out of all the respondents, over half of the respondents thought the vaccine was not safe. And that was something that really, really shocked me. And I really thought that that just showed that this is such an important issue that we need to combat. And even though, like, now there's a lot of media about how people want to get the vaccine, but I think it's really important to know that there are also a significant amount of people who don't want to get the vaccine or they think it's not safe. And I think that's really important to look at and find out why they might hold that belief. And so that's the way I analyzed the data. I looked at the question, do you think the vaccine is safe? And then I looked at the beliefs of people who did think it was safe versus the beliefs of people who didn't, to see, like, oh, what other beliefs do these people have if they don't think the vaccine is safe? What might be influencing that belief about the vaccine?
Wow. Did you find that those who thought it was safe or those who thought it wasn't, were there any certain segments of society that were more prone to think that it's not safe?
The people who felt the vaccine was not safe were more likely to be from rural areas, so like areas with less access to the internet or something like that. And they were more likely to be lower income and less educated when compared to the people who did think the vaccine was safe. And I think that that shows that we need to be communicating better with people from these underserved areas because they're more likely to view the vaccine negatively.
Now, this was a nationwide survey, right?
Yeah.
How did you go about administering it? Like, was it something you spread just via social media and anyone who wanted to could answer, or was it targeted?
Yeah, so I put it out on a survey platform, and basically they have these platforms you can put surveys out on, and they recruit volunteers who fill out the survey voluntarily. And so that's how I was able to get the respondents.
Very cool. So your results are nationwide. Did you do any parsing it down as far as what it looks like in the county?
No, I wasn't able to look at it county-wise because we didn't ask them like the specific state or county they lived in. But I asked them, like, do you live in a rural, urban, or suburban area? And so I analyzed it by those more general factors.
Did you ask any questions about how much research people had done versus, like, willingness to do research versus the inability to do research because they don't have, like you said, access to the internet or what have you?
Yeah, I think the inability to do research is a big problem, especially among people from rural areas. And that's something that's difficult to look at because my survey was online, so I couldn't really reach out to people without internet connection. And that's something I really want to do with future research is find a way to communicate with people who might not have a connection to the internet and see what their beliefs are. But one of the questions I asked in the survey was, how much do you trust or like utilize information about COVID-19 from these sources? And I listed some sources. And people who thought the vaccine is unsafe were less likely to use sources like the Centers for Disease Control and scientific research, some of the most accurate information sources they weren't using. And I think that's a sign that, not that the people are not using the sources correctly, but that we need to communicate the information from the sources better so that people are more encouraged to use those sources, because that's a really big problem that could lead to the spread of misinformation about the vaccine.
So what's next for you?
I definitely want to continue doing this type of research, like I said, because everything's changing so frequently, to keep up with it and see if people's attitudes are changing and if they're becoming more negative, how we can stop that, or if they're becoming more positive, how we can encourage that. And also to see which methods of communication work best with different types of people with COVID-19 information. Like, how can we help communicate findings from these accurate sources in a way that's more easy to understand and that is able to reach more people? And I think that's something I really want to continue, like testing different methods of communication, maybe through social media or things like that, to make it reach more people in an understandable way is something that I really want to continue looking into and testing.
Definitely not the fake news media. There are those people in the medical field who are refusing to get it at this point and stuff. Did you see any of that?
I didn't ask a question about careers, so I wasn't able to look at that specifically. But yeah, I think there are a lot of people from different backgrounds that think the vaccine is unsafe or might view it negatively. And I think that just means that we really need to make sure that information about the vaccine, accurate information about the vaccine, is being communicated to all types of people, no matter if they're like a professional doctor or if they live in a rural area.
I think it would be interesting, like you said, to see your research down the road and see how perceptions have changed. Because I know a lot of people who aren't necessarily, they're not anti-vaxxers, But because it's so new, they kind of want to wait and see how it's affecting everybody else first and what kind of reactions people are getting. So, 6 months down the road, when a lot larger percent of the people have had it, it'll be interesting to see what happens and how perceptions change.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Well, I think those are all my questions. Is there anything you think the listeners should know that I haven't asked you about?
To make sure that you can make informed health decisions and make sure you're getting accurate information that can help you make choices that are the best for you and your personal health.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it and your willingness to chat.
Awesome.
Well, good luck with your further research and getting back to school eventually, a little sooner rather than later now. And thanks again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
On March 19, 2020, the front page headlines of the Acorn newspapers announced, "Community locks down while fear moves in." The story continued to read, "Sit-down restaurants ordered to close. Businesses are going dark. All social life and non-essential business operations in the Ventura County and Las Virgenes area ground to a halt on Thursday, March 12, 2020, the day the stock market suffered its worst one-day plunge in more than 30 years as coronavirus fear gripped the nation. This week marks 1 year since that story and 1 year since the COVID-19 pandemic turned our world upside down. We asked Branching Out listeners to call us and share what and who has helped them through the challenges of the past year. Here's what they had to say.
Yes, this is Chase Rashid, City of Thousand Oaks, and what I became really appreciative of during the pandemic was my family. I know I could not have pulled through this by myself. You know, most people my age, I'm 34, would not want to be living with their family at that age. But for me, that family is very important, and that got me through it because I was helping out and doing all that. So I'm very appreciative for my family, even more so after this pandemic thing.
Hi, I'm Carrie Howard. I live in Newbury Park. And so I have a daughter who's an only child. And when the pandemic hit, I was not just her mom at that point. I instantly became her teacher and like her everyday playmate. And you know what saved us, especially in the very beginning? Legos. Buckets of Legos. Because I can't sit and play pretend and do that imaginative play like kids can do. But the one thing that we can do together for like hours on end is create with Legos. So God bless those little plastic bricks. So that's my message. Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Aaliyah Ewing, the host and creator of the local podcast Radio Simi, based in Simi Valley. What's helped us through this pandemic, above all, is friendship. We're all friends at Radio Simi, so it never feels like work. We constantly support each other and give each other help when needed. I'm thankful for our team, and I'm looking forward to working with them some more. Thank you to the Acorn for letting us share. Happy 1 year anniversary.
Hi, my name is Jessica and I live in Camarillo. Something that has kept me really grounded through the past year has actually been my kids. I know it's been alternatively insane having them home all the time and schooling here, but they have really been an asset. It's so easy to get lost in all of the craziness that's happening, but then you have the levity and the enjoyment of kids at home, and it's a real eye-opener to what really matters. So they've been a real grounding source for me and a reminder to not take things so seriously and to enjoy the little things and not sweat them. So all in all, I think having my kids has actually been an enormous blessing in this pandemic.
Hi, this is Chief Tim Hagel, and I am thankful for the thousands and thousands of volunteers in the Caneo Valley. From Agora Hills to Newbury Park, from the San Monica Mountains to the areas of Sunset Hills, that have pulled together in every aspect with the kindest acts of humanity for one another. And I wake up every day just grateful for all of the Kanaoans.
Hi, I may be too late to list the positives of the past year, but I'm just throwing them out there now. I just wanted to say I've read more books in the past year than I have in possibly, I don't know, the last 10 years. And I finally figured out how and when to listen to podcasts. And two of my faves are, one, Branching Out, and Smartless. So thanks for opening up that world to me. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Branching Out. And next week, we'll continue our Women's History specials with another female ACORN reporter. If you want to be sure not to miss an episode, follow us on Twitter at Branching Out Pod. And if you're so inclined to read my thoughts and live tweets from city council meetings, follow me at Becca Whitnall on Twitter. Thanks so much.